May 27th, 2000. Negril, Jamaica. When she is denied entry into Cuba for an assignment, 29-year-old travel writer Claudia Kershaw is rerouted to a Sandals Beach resort in Jamaica while she waits for a flight back home to New York. After last being seen walking along a beach, Claudia vanishes without a trace and most of her personal items are left behind in her hotel room. The investigation leads to a resort bartender whom Claudia went out with prior to her disappearance, but there is not enough evidence to implicate him, and Claudia continues to remain a missing person. After that, the trail went cold.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and we've got another missing persons case to cover today. The 2000 disappearance of Claudia Kershaw. That voice you just heard narrating our intro was Alyssa Rem Carysing, the latest winner of our most recent Trail Went Cold listener voiceover contest, so thank you very much, Alyssa. This is a recurring monthly contest which we've been carrying on for over 2 years now, and if you'd like to enter, and haven't already done so, I will be providing instructions at the end of this episode. Anyway, Alyssa originally hails from the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago, so this week, I'm going to be exploring a cold case which took place on another island country in the Caribbean. The actual victim in this story was an American travel writer from New York named Claudia Kershaw, who was supposed to be traveling to Cuba for a junket, but after she was denied entry into the country during a layover in Jamaica, Sandals Resorts Incorporated offered her a complimentary stay at one of the resorts, Beaches Negril. She was scheduled to remain there for nearly a week, until a flight back home became available, but something happened to her before she could leave. Most of you are probably familiar with the disappearance of Natalie Holloway, another young American woman who went missing during a trip to the Caribbean island of Aruba, and while Claudia's disappearance didn't receive nearly as much attention, you can definitely see some parallels between the two cases. There's been suspicion that a bartender whom Claudia went out on a date with might have been involved in what happened, and a cover-up was orchestrated to protect him, but no body has ever been found, and the local authorities do not believe there is enough evidence to make an arrest. The official 20-year anniversary of Claudia's disappearance will be next month, so I think this is a good time to explore the case on this podcast. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as low as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now delve into the unsolved disappearance of Claudia Kershaw. Our story begins in the year 2000, and our central figure is 29-year-old Claudia Kershaw. Claudia originally hails from Morristown, New Jersey, and graduated with a degree in political science from Washington and Lee University. She would spend years working as a freelancer while living in Morristown with her parents, Fred and Mary Ann Kershaw, but in April of 1999, Claudia was hired as a writer and assistant editor for Frommer's Travel Guides. She would work at their office in Manhattan and pretty much considered it to be her dream job since she loved traveling. In December of that year, Claudia finally decided to move into an apartment in the Astoria neighborhood of Queens in order to be closer to her place of employment. Within months, she was selected to participate in a travel junket sponsored by Sandals Resorts Incorporated. This would allow her to attend the opening of one of their new resorts in Havana, Cuba, and research the local tourist destinations for an upcoming travel guide about the country. On May the 24th, Claudia and some other travel writers boarded a plane and flew to Montego Bay, Jamaica for a layover, where she was scheduled to board another flight to Havana the following day. But after spending the night there, the writers were informed that they were going to be denied entry into Cuba since the country had a tense political relationship with the U.S. at the time. All flights back to New York were booked until June the 1st, but Sandals Resorts offered to reroute Claudia and another travel writer named Tanya Grosinger to Beaches Negril, an all-inclusive resort located on 7 Mile Beach in the town of Negril, where they could stay until they managed to get a flight back home. Claudia accepted the offer, and after traveling to Beaches Negril, Claudia phoned her supervisor and parents to inform them about what was going on. During their stay there, Claudia became friends with Tanya Grosinger, who got the hotel manager to use his influence to book her on a flight to New York on May the 27th. However, Claudia was willing to remain at the resort for a few more days and told Tanya of her plans to travel to other popular Jamaican destinations, such as the Bob Marley Museum in Kingston. On the evening of May 26th, Claudia met Tanya for dinner and told her that she had spent the previous night going out on a date with one of the resort's bartenders, Anthony Grant. Anthony was in his 20s, lived in the town of Green Island with his mother and sisters, and had been employed at Beaches Negril since they opened 3 years earlier. Claudia and Anthony seemed to bond over their love of reggae music, so he offered to take her to a seaside nightclub to see a local reggae band. Afterward, Claudia said they smoked some marijuana together and went skinny dipping before Anthony took her back to the resort, though he made sure to keep his distance from the entrance when he dropped her off, since the hotel had a strict policy against staff members dating the guests. When Anthony asked Claudia out again the following night, she declined before they went their separate ways. Anyway, after Claudia met Tanya for breakfast on the morning of May 27th, they said goodbye to each other before Tanya headed to the airport and boarded her flight to New York. Claudia was scheduled to return to her office in Manhattan on the morning of June the 2nd, but she did not show up and never contacted anyone. Claudia's parents, Fred and Mary Ann, also grew concerned after she failed to return several phone messages from them. After learning about their daughter's no-show at her workplace, the Kershaws decided to contact Beaches Negril and were alarmed to learn that Claudia had never officially checked out and was now missing. It turned out that the last confirmed sighting of her took place at around 1 p.m. on May the 27th, when a lifeguard thought he saw her walking along 7 Mile Beach. Over the next few days, when maids went inside Claudia's hotel room to clean it, they noted in their logs that the bed had not been slept in, the towels were not used, and all of her personal items, including her clothes packed inside her suitcase, remain untouched in the same place. After Claudia's checkout date passed, hotel security decided to drill into the room safe and found Claudia's passport, return plane ticket, credit cards, cell phone, and $180 in cash. The only items which appeared to be missing were Claudia's bikini, one of her t-shirts, and a portable radio. This prompted the staff to contact the Jamaica Constabulary Force and officially report Claudia missing. Upon learning this, Fred and Marianne immediately contacted the United States Embassy in Kingston before traveling to Negril to search for their daughter. They would later learn that Claudia had managed to book a new flight to New York on May the 29th, which would have allowed her to return home 2 days earlier than expected, but she obviously never boarded it. Since the last reported sighting of Claudia took place on 7 Mile Beach, police looked into the possibility that she could have drowned, but they did not find that likely. Since the water along the beach was not that deep, and the current not that strong, they believed that the tide would have eventually caused her body to wash up on shore. However, investigators would soon uncover some odd events which occurred at Beaches Negril when Claudia went missing. Even though the license plates of all vehicles which entered and left the resort were recorded in a logbook as a security precaution, the logbook for the month of May went missing before it could be examined, with the staff offering the explanation that one of the security guards must have accidentally misplaced it or threw it out. Even though there was a surveillance camera mounted near Claudia's room, the footage from the week of her disappearance was taped over before police could look at it. And before the room could be processed as a potential crime scene, housekeeping and hotel security took Claudia's personal items to the manager's office, and the room was cleaned and rented out to other guests. In addition, Claudia's cell phone, which had been left behind in her room safe, also inexplicably went missing before it could be examined. Claudia's camera was also in her room, and the resort staff actually went to the trouble of developing the film on their own. They claimed that no photographs were found on the roll, but the Kershaws were skeptical of this, believing that the staff had either confiscated or exposed the film. During the initial stages of the investigation, Leo Lambert, the head of corporate public relations for Sandals Resorts, told the Kershaws that he had seen Claudia at the resort on May the 28th, the day after she was spotted on the beach, and that she also failed to show up for her scheduled ride to the airport on the 29th. Lambert would soon hold a press conference and take everyone by surprise by portraying Claudia as an adventure seeker who had gone on a partying binge during her stay in Negril, even sharing how she had smoked marijuana and had sex with one of the resort's employees because she, quote-unquote, doesn't mind screwing around sometimes. Lambert implied that Claudia might have run off on her own in order to live with a new Jamaican lover and free herself from her, quote-unquote, oppressive American lifestyle. Well, needless to say, the Kershaws were taken completely aback by Lambert's comments. The information about Claudia's date with Anthony Grant had been faxed to Lambert by Tanya Grosinger, but she was outraged about Lambert misrepresenting her story, stating, quote, "This is pure character assassination. It's blame the victim," end quote. Tanya maintained that Claudia had told her she only went skinny dipping with Anthony, but specifically denied having sex with him. Well, once Claudia's disappearance made news around the island, numerous eyewitnesses would report having seen her in various nightclubs and villages. In some of these sightings, Claudia was supposedly in the company of a Rastafarian man. However, Claudia's parents did not believe she took off on her own, because even though she did love to travel and go on adventures, she always made sure to constantly phone them to let them know where she was. Indeed, even after investigating over 400 tips, the authorities were unable to confirm any of the alleged sightings of Claudia or uncover any evidence that she was still alive. The founder of Sandals Resorts Incorporated was Gordon Butch Stewart, one of Jamaica's wealthiest and most influential citizens. He personally called the Kershaws to apologize for Lambert's comments at the press conference and assured them that he had reprimanded his staff for how they handled Claudia's disappearance. He also chipped in $25 towards a reward fund, and in total, a reward of $50,000, roughly 20 times the average annual income in Jamaica, was offered for information. In spite of this, the Kershaws expressed their dissatisfaction towards the investigation from the Jamaica Constabulary Force, claiming that the local authorities were uncooperative with them and would not let them examine Claudia's investigative file. They actually managed to lobby a congressman into contacting the Jamaican government, where he informed them that he was attaching a rider to a new bill which was giving funds to their country. The rider stated that the funds would be withheld if the government did not allow the FBI to assist with the investigation, so they agreed to the request, marking the first time the FBI had ever investigated the disappearance of an American citizen in Jamaica. They arrived in July, and were accompanied by canine handler Harry Oakes Jr., the head of International Canine Search and Rescue Services, and he also brought along his tracking dog, Valerie. Valerie would track Claudia's scent along 7 Mile Beach, as well as to a gate leading to the streets and a nearby wooded area. But most disturbingly, she also picked up Claudia's scent in the trunk and back seat of Anthony Grant's Toyota Corolla, and a strand of what appeared to be Claudia's hair was found in the back seat as well. When Valerie searched through Anthony's house, Claudia's scent was picked up on a pair of boots, as well as a pair of gloves inside a suitcase underneath Anthony's bed. When he was first questioned by the Jamaica Constabulary Force, Anthony denied ever meeting Claudia, and they pretty much took him at his word. But it turned out that Anthony had called in sick at his bartending job on May the 28th, the day after Claudia was last seen, and he did not return to work for 4 days. He was re-interviewed by the FBI and given a polygraph, which he wound up failing. Upon learning this, Anthony finally admitted to having gone out with Claudia on May the 25th and said that he only lied because he had another girlfriend at the time and his employer had a strict policy against dating guests. Anthony claimed he had sex with Claudia and went out with her again a second time on the evening of May 26th, but he never saw her after that. However, his story was contradicted by Tanya Grosinger, who maintained that she had dinner with Claudia on the evening of the 26th, and that Claudia had denied having sex with Anthony. Even though Anthony failed a number of questions on his polygraph, when he was directly asked if he killed Claudia and responded no, the results indicated that he was telling the truth. The map from Anthony's car trunk, as well as the boots and gloves, were given to the FBI evidence response team and taken to their forensic laboratory in the US. DNA testing on the items proved to be inconclusive, and no evidence of foul play could be found. A knife was also taken from Anthony's residence, which appeared to have a small amount of blood on the blade, but the sample was too small to perform a thorough analysis. The Jamaica Constabulary Force have since stated that they do not consider Anthony to be a suspect in Claudia's disappearance, but he would still be fired from Sandals Resorts, who considered his unprofessional conduct with a guest to be a breach of company policy. Anthony would hire an attorney, who maintained his client's innocence, and publicly question the credibility of Valerie the tracking dog. The FBI would also question Leo Lambert, who admitted that he lied to the Kershaws about having seen Claudia at the resort on May the 28th, because he wanted to protect Sandals' reputation and save his job. Interestingly enough, it turned out that Lambert took 4 days off from work at the exact same time as Anthony Grant, and he even tried to obtain a new passport on short notice. In another odd turn of events, on the same weekend Claudia disappeared, two men apparently showed up at the front desk at Beach's Negril and asked for her by name. Investigators were able to track these men down, and one of them happened to be a jet ski instructor at the resort, but they denied being there that particular weekend or having asked for Claudia. In June of 2001, the Kershaws received an anonymous letter which stated that Claudia had gone to a party with Anthony Grant where a date rape drug was slipped into her drink, causing her to go into convulsions and fatally overdose. Fred and Marianne hired a private investigator to look into all the different tips they received, but he never found anything to substantiate them, and the investigation hit a brick wall. In May of 2002, at the request of her parents, Claudia was declared legally dead by a Superior Court judge who ruled that it was unlikely that she disappeared of her own volition. This opened the door for the Kershaws to file a lawsuit against Sandals Resorts Incorporated, where they alleged that employees from Beach's Negril withheld information about what happened to their daughter and purposely destroyed evidence in order to impede the investigation. This would have required the resort's employees to be deposed and answer questions about the case while under oath, and the civil trial was scheduled to take place in December of 2005. That same year, Claudia's disappearance would garner additional attention when Natalie Holloway went missing from Aruba, and the case became a worldwide media sensation. A number of media outlets would make comparisons between the two cases, and at one point, a Jamaican caller phoned a US radio station to say that two men had once told him that Claudia's body was placed inside a 55-gallon drum, and they knew where it was buried. But once again, this lead never went anywhere. Anyway, I've been unable to find any information about whether or not the civil trial between the Kershaws and Sandals Resorts actually took place and what might have happened there. But according to a memoir published by Tanya Grosinger, in which she devoted a chapter to this case, the two sides ultimately reached a confidential settlement in 2007. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like there have been any further developments in the case since then, and after two decades, Claudia's disappearance continues to remain unsolved. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So even though all missing persons cases are a traumatic experience for the victim's loved ones, it's particularly difficult when the victim goes missing in a foreign country that they are not familiar with, because this can lead to all sorts of additional issues with red tape and the local authorities. But the ironic thing about this story is that Claudia went missing from a country she wasn't even planning to visit to begin with. Remember, her original assignment was to attend a travel junket in Cuba, where things were pretty tense at that time, so when she contacted her parents to let them know she was being denied entry there, they actually breathed a sigh of relief, never imagining that she would go missing from an entirely different country instead. Jamaica has always had serious issues with violent crime, but it also relies heavily on its tourism industry, which generates over $1 billion per year. This is why they attempt to portray resort areas like Beaches Negril as safe zones, and tourists are generally discouraged from leaving these areas for their own safety. But the problem with Claudia's case is that she was last seen at one of these supposedly safe resorts, and one of their employees was suspected of potentially being involved in her disappearance, and that's the kind of thing which can scare tourists away. As you might recall, last week I released an episode about the unsolved disappearance of Claudia Lawrence from the United Kingdom and explored how the media's portrayal of the victim and her personal relationships caused a negative impact on the investigation, as well as the public's perception of her. Well, here we are once again with another case involving a missing woman named Claudia, where the exact same thing nearly happened, but it seemed a lot more calculated in this particular case. We have Leo Lambert, this PR head from Sandals Resorts, holding a press conference in which he portrays Claudia as a wild, promiscuous woman and tries to push forward the idea that she just wanted to run away and start a new life living in the hills with some Jamaican lover. But of course, that idea was just completely ridiculous, since Claudia always maintained a close relationship with her family, had recently moved into a new apartment, and was pretty much working her dream job, which allowed her to travel the world and get paid for it. And even if she did have a reason to run off, she left all of her personal items behind in her hotel room and literally had nothing on her besides a bikini, t-shirt, and portable radio. However, unlike the Claudia Lawrence case, I don't think painting the victim in a negative light was done just to sell newspapers. This was an obvious attempt to protect the public image of Sandals Resorts Incorporated and the Jamaican tourist industry, as they wanted to dispel the idea that an American tourist might have been abducted and murdered, and instead push forward the narrative that Claudia just took off voluntarily. Anyway, I've already made comparisons between this case and the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. Claudia's story did receive a lot of coverage from the media at the time it originally happened, and was even featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. But of course, it was nowhere near as big as Natalie's story, and pretty much got pushed out of the spotlight after 2005. I know that Fred and Marianne Kershock supposedly reached a confidential settlement with Sandals Resorts after they filed their lawsuit against them, so I wonder if this has prevented any new information about the case from being released over the past decade. Now, if for any reason you're not familiar with Natalie Holloway's disappearance, here's a brief synopsis of the parallels between Claudia's case. Natalie was an 18-year-old high school graduate from Alabama who went on a school trip to Aruba in May of 2005, but was reported missing after she failed to make her flight home. She was last seen leaving a nightclub with a local 17-year-old resident named Horan Vandersloot and two of his friends, but she was never seen again, and like Claudia, Natalie left behind all her personal items in her hotel room. Well, as you probably know, most people suspect that Joran Vandersloot was responsible for Natalie's disappearance, and he is currently serving time in a Peruvian prison for murdering another young woman named Stephanie Flores Ramirez on the exact 5-year anniversary of when Natalie went missing. And like Claudia's case, there have been complaints about a corrupt or incompetent police investigation and allegations that a cover-up took place. But while Joran van der Sloot hailed from a prominent and influential family, the primary person of interest in Claudia's case, Anthony Grant, was just a resort bartender without any powerful ties. However, there is compelling evidence to suggest that his employer did take steps to cover up what happened to Claudia, though this may have been done for reasons which extended far beyond protecting Anthony, who still wound up losing his job just for going out on a date with Claudia. While Joran van der Sloot's self-destructive exploits following Natalie's disappearance are very well documented, I have no idea what happened to Anthony Grant or what he's up to today. So here's what we do know. The last person who could confirm having spoken with Claudia before she went missing is Tanya Grosinger, who had breakfast with her on the morning of May 27th. Claudia was then seen walking down the beach by a lifeguard at around 1:30 p.m. that afternoon, and while eyewitnesses in missing persons cases can often be mistaken, I'm inclined to believe this one might be legitimate. Since the only items missing from Claudia's room were a bikini, t-shirt, and portable radio, that definitely suggests she was heading to the beach before something happened to her. Of course, the simplest explanation would be that Claudia walked into the water and drowned, but it seems like this theory has been completely written off because everyone believes her body would have washed up on shore at some point. The Jamaica Constabulary Force have even dismissed the idea that Claudia drowned, and given how certain people from the area seem to have an interest in getting away from the idea that she was a victim of foul play, the police probably would have pushed the drowning theory much harder if there was any possibility of it being true. Now, most of the information we know about the relationship between Claudia and Anthony Grant is from a third-hand source, Tanya Grosinger, who was simply relaying the information Claudia shared with her. According to Tanya, Claudia's story is that she went to a nightclub with Anthony on the evening of May 25th and smoked some marijuana with him before they went skinny dipping. However, she apparently maintained that she did not have sex with Anthony, and when he asked her out again the following night, she declined. Of course, Anthony denied even knowing Claudia for months until he was questioned by the FBI, but he claimed he did have sex with Claudia, and they went out for a second time on May the 26th. Now, Tanya claims this isn't true because she had dinner with Claudia on the evening of the 26th, but I guess I can't completely discount the possibility that after they parted ways, Claudia could have met up with Anthony later that night. But if she did, she never mentioned this to Tanya when they had breakfast together on the morning of the 27th. Now, it must be stated that it really doesn't matter whether or not Claudia actually had sex with Anthony, because either way, it's her own business. But if they didn't have sex, and she turned down Anthony after he asked her out a second time, then this could have given him a potential motive to go after her on the 27th. Of course, even if he had no involvement with Claudia's disappearance, I can still understand why Anthony would have felt the need to lie about having gone out with Claudia, since he apparently had another girlfriend at the time, and employees dating guests was a fireable offense. Obviously, you can't put a lot of stock into the results of polygraph tests, since they're not completely reliable, but the FBI made it a point to mention that even though Anthony was shown to be untruthful on a number of the questions he answered, the results seemed to indicate that the one question he answered where he was being truthful was when he denied killing Claudia. Claudia's parents have always expressed their belief that even if Anthony did not directly harm her, he may have introduced her to someone else who did, and at the very least, knows exactly what happened and is withholding information. I think one of the biggest flaws with the original investigation by the Jamaica Constabulary Force is that they automatically believed Anthony when he denied knowing Claudia and did not push him harder like the FBI did. One of the local detectives was interviewed on Unsolved Mysteries and stated that Anthony is not considered a suspect, which I find a bit odd, but I guess the wording might have been a tad ambiguous, and this doesn't necessarily mean they've eliminated him as a suspect. I don't believe there's enough evidence to actually make an arrest, but even if you discount his lying, I definitely believe there's enough reason to be suspicious of him. There's the fact that a strand of Claudia's hair was found inside Anthony's vehicle, and a tracking dog detected her scent there, which might not be suspicious by itself, since by his own admission, he did drive Claudia to a nightclub. However, it's a bit more troubling that her scent was detected inside the trunk. The scent being detected on a pair of Anthony's boots can be explained away, since he could have worn them on the night he went out with her, but it's not explainable for her scent being on a pair of his gloves, because why would he be wearing those on a date? And then there's the fact that Anthony called in sick on the day after Claudia was last seen and did not return to work for 4 days. On its own, it might not look so suspicious, but it seems like one hell of a coincidence that Leo Lambert, the resort's head of public relations, just happened to be absent from work on those exact same days. I'm not trying to imply that Lambert himself personally harmed Claudia, but I get the impression that there had to be more than one person involved in what happened to her. It's really tough to know what to make of Lambert, because he intentionally twisted information Tanya Grossinger provided to him when he gave his press conference about Claudia's disappearance, and pretty much devolved into victim blaming when he pushed forward the idea that Claudia ran off with a secret lover. He then admitted to lying to Claudia's parents about having seen her at the resort after the last confirmed sighting of her, but you have to ask, was he doing all this just to protect the resort's reputation and dispel the idea that a violent crime might have taken place there? Or did he actually have direct knowledge or involvement of what happened? Well, the fact that potentially important evidence just happened to go missing from Beach's Negril gives off the impression that something a lot more sinister took place. So to recap, once the hotel staff realized that Claudia was missing, they cleaned and rented out a room to other guests before the police had a chance to process it as a potential crime scene, and they recorded over footage from a surveillance camera which overlooked her room. Now, I have my doubts that something actually happened to Claudia inside the room, but let's combine this with all the other odd mistakes the resort made. They lost that particular month's logbook, which kept a record of all the vehicles that went in and out of the hotel. They somehow lost Claudia's cell phone after collecting it from her room, and they took the initiative of developing the film inside her camera without consulting anyone, and likely destroyed it. I know they claim there were no photographs on the roll, but I find that very unlikely, as Claudia's entire job involved traveling to and documenting tourist destinations, so there's no way she would have spent a couple days in Jamaica without taking any pictures. If only one or two of these mistakes had occurred, I could probably just write them off as sloppiness or incompetence, but when you combine all of these things together, it seems pretty deliberate. Now, I'm not trying to say that Sandals Resorts Incorporated perpetuated some mammoth conspiracy in order to cover up what happened. I mentioned earlier that the owner of Sandals, Gordon Butch Stewart, is one of the wealthiest, most influential people in Jamaica. Fred and Marianne Kershaw actually had nothing but good things to say about how he treated them. Stewart covered all of their travel expenses, contributed to the reward fund, paid for radio ads which helped spread the word about Claudia's case in the local media, and he seemed just as disappointed as the Kershaws by how Beach's Negril handled her disappearance. However, even though Leo Lambert was supposedly reprimanded for the way he conducted himself during that press conference, a Google search revealed that Lambert was still working as Sandals' corporate PR director for years afterward, so it doesn't look like his actions cost him his job. Again, knowing more details about how the lawsuit between Sandals and the Kershaws turned out might shed some more light on how complicit they were. But you have to ask, if the resort was complicit, would they have really gone to all this trouble just to protect a bartender like Anthony Grant? Well, this is why some people have speculated that even if Anthony was not directly responsible for what happened to Claudia, he might have introduced her to the person who was. And perhaps this person was much higher on the food chain and exerted enough influence to compel the resort to dispose of evidence which pointed to his involvement. But how would these events have played out? Well, we know Claudia was last seen on Seven Mile Beach, but like its title suggests, this was a very large beach. We have no idea which exact spot she was planning to settle down at, or if it was isolated enough that she could have been attacked in broad daylight without anyone seeing anything. Now, it's possible that nothing even happened at the beach, and instead, Claudia wound up meeting someone and left with them voluntarily. Even though all the sources state the exact items which were missing from Claudia's hotel room, one detail which isn't clear is if she took any footwear with her. If she was only planning to walk along the beach, she might have decided to leave barefoot. But I'm not sure she would have willingly gone somewhere else without returning to her room to get some shoes, as well as change her clothing, since all she had on was a bikini and a t-shirt. However, would Claudia have even left with someone else voluntarily? Since she supposedly turned down a second date with Anthony Grant, I don't know if that would imply that she wanted nothing more to do with him. We also have the odd account of these two men, one of them a resort jet ski instructor, who supposedly showed up at the front desk asking for Claudia after she went missing, but then denied this ever happened. Details about this whole situation are sketchy, but if they're not telling the truth, does this mean Claudia became acquainted with these guys, or any other men, during her stay there? Well, she was at the resort for at least 3 days, so that definitely could have happened, but as far as I can tell, she never told Tanya Grosinger about any encounters with any men besides Anthony Grant. Now, the Kershaws eventually received an anonymous letter, which claimed that Claudia died because she had a fatal reaction to a date rape drug which was slipped into her drink at a party. This has also been pushed forward as a potential theory for Natalie Holloway's disappearance, and it's certainly plausible here. Whoever was responsible probably never planned on killing Claudia, but once she reacted badly to this drug, they had to cover the whole thing up and dispose of her body. If one or more employees from the resort were complicit in this, then it would definitely explain their need to destroy potential evidence and orchestrate a cover-up. But how or when did Claudia wind up at this party mentioned in the letter? If the sighting of her on the beach is accurate, did she really go there to a party dressed in nothing more than a bikini and a t-shirt? Well, if the party took place on the beach, then I guess that's possible, but we have no idea of Claudia's exact whereabouts after 1:30 p.m. on the afternoon of May 27th. However, if the scenario outlined in the letter is the truth, then I would not be surprised if Anthony Grant was involved in some way. Even if he was not directly responsible, he could have brought Claudia to this party and introduced her to the individual who slipped the date rape drug into her drink. Anthony could have also been enlisted to help get rid of Claudia's body, which would explain why her scent was detected inside his car trunk. But overall, without a body or any evidence that a crime took place, we can only speculate. The only thing I know for certain is that Claudia did not take off voluntarily and go off to live with some Jamaican lover. She definitely became the victim of foul play, and it's very likely that multiple people were involved, or at least have some knowledge about what happened. Given that 2 decades have passed, and there was so much red tape holding up the investigation, we may never know the actual truth, and sadly, I'm not sure that Claudia's loved ones will ever get any full answers. All that being said, should you happen to have any information on the unsolved disappearance of Claudia Kershaw, please contact the appropriate authorities. Anyway, another special thanks to Alyssa Ram Carysingh for doing such a great job at narrating the opening of this episode. If you've already entered our voiceover contest before, you are automatically eligible for my next random drawing, so you don't have to do anything. But if you would like to enter the contest and haven't already done so, all you have to do is send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, naming the one unsolved cold case you would most like to see covered on this podcast. So once again, send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, we covered the bizarre saga of Julie Mott, a young woman who died of cystic fibrosis before her body was stolen from her casket at a funeral home and it has still not been found. And for our patrons in tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Luis H., Alicia G., Ravi R., Julie Denise B., and Rakshana B. Thank you all so much for your support. And I'd also like to mention that this coming Saturday, May the 2nd, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'm going to be holding another one of our live watch-together events in which I screen classic segments from Unsolved Mysteries about cases which were featured on The Trail Went Cold. You can join us on the streaming service SciTube and chat with myself and your fellow listeners while you watch these segments. The link to our live stream is pinned at the top of our Facebook and Twitter pages, and we've also included it in today's show notes, and all you have to do to join us is click on the link. So once again, our Unsolved Mysteries Live Watch Together event takes place this coming Saturday, May the 2nd, at 8 p.m. Hope to see you there. I also just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourself a great week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.